Hello, and welcome to another episode of Temporal Culture War, where we dig into what the hell was going on in America in the early 2000s while we watch one of television history's most maligned properties, Star Trek Enterprise. I take a deep breath for that one. I am your science officer for this episode, Maddie Lipchansky.
And I'm the Captain, Clayton Ashley.
The Captain. This week, it is episode 3 of season 2. Minefield, and the week of October 2nd, 2002.
Are we going to catch up to our time? Are we eventually? I feel like we're going to get it. It's going to like...
I don't think Star Trek Enterprise got to the year 2025.
The week of the month of the year.
The week of the month of the year. I don't think so, because we're only recording every 2 weeks.
Oh, so you're right. They would have to go faster than us.
We might meet it the other way around.
Yeah. Okay.
Who's to say? Well, who knows? Who's to say?
I don't have much else to say about this. This felt just like such a standard Star Trek kind of episode.
It could have been an episode of any Trek, which is both an insult and a compliment.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I think.
Like, if this was an episode of Voyager, I'd be like, yeah. If this is an episode of Deep Space Nine, I'd be like, sure. Mm-hmm. TNG? Absolutely.
Could be.
It would be any modern Trek. I don't think it would be an episode of OG Trek.
They didn't go outside the ship that often back then.
We almost never. I guess we'll get into this, but I do.
Oh, we will.
My favorite thing about this episode is I love how much in this series they are outside the ship more.
Uh-huh.
It feels a little bit more like they are in space than previous Star Trek series, and I think that's on purpose, and I think that is them recognizing, utilizing one of the thousand cool things they could have done with this show.
Yeah.
Okay, let's get into the events and say culture, etc. So the purview of me, the science officer, for our dumb little distinction that we made.
Take us away.
That we have to do now every week. And okay. Well, so national news, there was not a lot except for one big thing happened. The very night, October 2nd, that this episode aired, was the first night of the October 2002 Beltway sniper attacks. Do you remember that?
That's real. Yeah, no.
That's a real fucking thing. And like, you know, the actual shootings started in February of 2002, but the first of the sniper attacks, like this one guy who was in his 40s and his 17-year-old accomplice have been killing people all summer, but in just normal style ways. Mm-hmm. But the whole setup with like the car and the sniper rifle and all that, that started on October 2nd, 2002.
Wow. So like I was
they
like,
shot through the window of a Michaels in Maryland.
Oh no. So on this show, the news, I'm girding myself every time because it's either going to be like the silliest bullshit you've ever heard. Or something legitimately terrifying.
Something legitimately terrifying. I mean, they ended up killing a lot of people, I think. 17 people, 10 wounded in a 10-month span. And, you know, and like our episodes go on, we can keep up with what happens here. But the first incidents.
Can't wait.
Were October 2nd and 3rd, where on October 2nd, at like 5 p.m. or so, maybe the employees of the Michaels were all talking about how excited they were to watch an episode of Star Trek that night, or perhaps more likely something else on television.
Ed and his family or something. I don't.
Yeah, as Ed and family.
There's definitely something about this, like, you know, like all the terrorism stuff, even in Kansas, they're like, well, can we go to the gas station? Can we go to Target?
Of course.
But it was also like this one, there was something about it's almost mundanity in that it wasn't anthrax. It wasn't a bomb. It was just someone with a gun that could shoot you and you wouldn't know where it came from.
Yeah. And like, this was crazy. It was like, they shot through the Michaels and missed everybody. And like, oh, that was weird. And then an hour later, a guy who was a program analyst at NOAA, like the weather service, it's the Ocean and Atmospheric Administration.
Right? Okay. Yeah. Thanks for the distinction.
They're our regulatory agency. Yeah. They do the weather forecasts. NOAA, a NOAA programmer was killed like an hour after that. And then the next morning, October 3rd, while most people were in their kitchens at home discussing the events of Star Trek Enterprise, It was like four people in 2 hours in
Montgomery
County, in Maryland. And, like they were just driving around killing people at random for a while. And then it happened for, a couple more weeks. There was more on the 4th and then more on the 7th, which would be the next week. But it was like the anthrax thing where it's just like, but actually people were dying, you know, like it was just the absolute atmosphere of terror.
It wasn't targeting like government officials. I mean, I know that guy was in the government, but not like senators and stuff. And
no, and it was like, you know, I mean, there was this, it was mostly all people that the shooters knew. It turns out a lot.
I don't remember that. Wow.
A lot of them were.
Okay.
And then later it just started being like,
random. Wow.
Random people. Yeah. And so it's a really very gnarly series of events there that started, but I think it's part of the whole sort of like frenzy of like, oh, people all over the country being like, they're going to fly planes into my house. They're going to, the Beltway sniper is going to come to my house and kill me. I'm going to get anthrax mailed to me. And this like paranoia that permeated all of society.
Yeah, while 2002, really.
It'd be a bad time. Like 2002 is when things get really wacky, I think.
Yeah.
So that's the news.
Thanks.
Yeah, I wanted to start with that because there's so we can have more fun.
After. Yeah, I get it. Yeah.
So in the world of music, I have defeated the Billboard Hot 100's paywall.
Good. Yes, we hacked. We're in.
I did hacking noises. I got us in. So new this week, some stuff I don't remember, have never heard of, like a song called Are We Cuttin' by Pastor Troy featuring Ms. Jade. Not familiar.
Did you say Pastor?
Pastor. Like
Yeah. Oh.
In sort of like the coming terror of how bad music really does get, we've got Who's Your Daddy by Toby Keith and number 74. Oh,
God. Well, like I said before, that country music was like radio stations were on. So like that I heard that one. Oh, yeah.
number 67, These Days by Rascal Flatts, burning up the charts, premiering. We all remember when Santana came back. And, you know, he always had like a pop star on it. So there was one I don't remember at all called The Game of Love that features Michelle Branch. Premiering at number 66 this week.
Kind of interesting mix.
Now here, I mean, here's a big one at number 43 premiering this week. Lose Yourself by Eminem.
Wait, that premiere, I thought, oh, wow. He really is on a, this is a big year for him.
He's on a tear because 8 Mile comes out November. Comes out on my 17th birthday.
Oh, happy birthday.
Like a month later.
Yeah.
But that's Lose Yourself comes out with a video. I think that is about the movie, you know, huge, huge stuff. And that's the highest we get for new releases. Now, the top five, largely unchanged. We got Eminem's Cleaning Out My Closet. Yeah. Avril Lavigne's Complicated, Gangsta Lovin', Eve featuring Alicia Keys, Dilemma with Nelly and Kelly Rowland.
Oh, right, yeah.
Rocketing up from number 52 last week at top in the charts.
Ooh.
Kelly Clarkson's A Moment Like This.
Of course, yes, yes. The American Idol pop star and kind of the only one.
I think like her and kid Carrie Underwood were the only ones to ever like really come
right,
out of it.
Right, yep.
And of course, Senator Ruben Studdard, of course, we all remember. Almost Representative Clay Aiken. We remember, of course, Ruben Studdard's I'm Sorry for 2004.
yeah, okay.
One what for a that. Cool fucking song. Anyways, yeah, like American Idol is huge. I mean, it's like still around and will never leave. But like,
yeah.
I feel as if.
And the really music talent like show gonna, in general is like.
It was, yeah. It really seemed for a moment like American Idol was going to stick around and it was going to keep giving us new pop stars. Mm-hmm. And it just never really happened again.
It kind of gave us that wild season of audition, rehearsal.
Yeah, Wings of Voice. Yeah.
Wings of Voice. Yeah, yeah.
Wings of Voice. Next, I'll take you to the world of television.
Getting the rabbit ears, tuning us in.
Yeah, tuning us in. This week, you'll be shocked to find that we have once again lost to let's all say it together. My Wife and Kids.
My Wife.
George Lopez. 60 Minutes 2. Ed. We beat Candid Camera. Of course, we are getting smashed by the baseball playoffs. Angels versus Yankees. This was, I believe, the clinching game of the first time ever the Anaheim Angels ever won a playoff series in their like 40 years of existence.
Oh, good for them.
Good for them at the destroying the, of course, evil New York Yankees.
Yeah.
Which
are they in the middle? Where is the juicing scandal at this point?
The juicing scandal is sort of like in the air, but it doesn't really get crazy until like, I want to say 2003 or so.
Okay. I wasn't sure if it's like into the 90s or not, if it already kind of happened, but it is. Okay.
No, I feel like it got really, really like, when was the Barry Bonds trial? Was 2011.
Yeah, but I was working.
I feel like the 2000s was when like people started getting really skeptical of what was going on. I mean, what year was the Sosa Bonds race? That was 98. So I think like we're in the middle of it being like kind of like an open secret.
Yeah. Okay.
But it's not like, you know, it's not, I recall in like 2003 to like 2006, it's like every single article about baseball is like, and they gotta do something about the steroids or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we're losing to that. We are tied with the vile Dawson.
Oh no.
You know, we thought he was gone because last week there was no Dawson. Well, he's back because this week it's their 2-part premiere.
Oh, come on.
And we are tied.
Okay, it's their premiere. It's just, you know, they only managed to tie.
Yeah, but we are.
I think we should look on the bright side of that.
Well, I don't know exactly how television ratings exactly what the numbers mean in work.
No, me neither.
We've got a, Star Trek Enterprise at a 3.5 rating and a 6 share and 5.2 viewers. Dawson is 3.56, 5.3. So I think they win the tiebreaker. And it's barely. Like, well, I guess I'll kill myself.
We have good ones coming up. We got good episodes coming up. We'll be fine.
Yeah, like last week, it was the WB Wednesday movie, and I got really excited about the possibility of us facing down a movie every week because we could talk about the old movies. But
I actually have to, because you brought up last week's episode. Mm-hmm. I talked to two people at a party the other day and brought up my podcast and that I talk about Enterprise.
Good.
Both of them independently brought up one episode, and that episode was Carbon Creek.
It's a memorable episode.
I get like someone.
It's
like,
one of the only ones that stuck in my brain when I thought about the
show. I guess
later.
So, yeah. People who have not watched anything more than, you know, I watched a couple episodes, and then they're like, I remember that one about when they went back in time and the Vulcans live in like a little old town.
Yeah.
I was like, wow, okay.
It's a famous episode.
Famous episode, I guess. Right.
Would you like to travel with me to the box office?
The box office is usually my favorite part.
That's why I saved it for the end. So not a lot of new stuff in the story. I'd love to check what's new in like the dreg pile at like number 50 at the box office, you know?
Of course. Yeah.
But it's like, oh, like, have you ever seen at number 51, The Man from Elysian Fields?
I wouldn't know. No, I can't say.
Yeah. It's got a crazy cast. It's Andy Garcia, Mick Jagger, Juliana Margulies. I don't know.
Stunning.
Yeah, it's like, it seems to be like a spy movie. It's not. It's an escort service.
Oh, okay.
I guess Andy Garcia plays
a different kind
novelist turned gigolo.
Oh,
okay.
Okay.
Sure. I don't know what this movie's about, and I've never heard of it, but it's just fun to see what's going on down there. So a thing we did not talk about, and I think that we missed in our big roundups and that whatever that the things that are around, is we didn't talk about how Spirited Away is in theaters right now.
I think I briefly mentioned it.
It
didn't hit very high. So
it did not. We also did not talk about the film Secretary, which has been in theaters for a couple weeks now.
Okay. I do not.
Maggie Gyllenhaal star vehicle where she's like in a like a 24/7 BDSM relationship with her boss.
Whoa, no.
Oh yeah, this was a movie that I watched on an airplane and I was clearly not supposed to when I was a teenager. Oh, pretty man. Cool.
Yeah.
It's just like one of those movies you're like, that's crazy. I remember like seeing it in the box office and like, or in the Blockbuster, and it's like the cover of it is burned into my brain where it's like Maggie Gyllenhaal dressed as like in like office casual, and she's like got like a yoke about her shoulders and neck. Yeah. And yeah. Also the film Igby Goes Down is kicking around. Remember Igby Goes Down?
You know what? I'm going to say I don't.
Karen Culkin and Jared Harris. It's fun. It's a fun movie that I enjoy. I remember it was like one of those movies I saw as a kid that I was like,
oh yeah,
now this is a movie, baby. Yeah. It's like it's like one of those like early 2000s black comedies where I, as a teenager, was like, and this is how all movies should be. All movies should be
like
death to Smoochie.
Cast.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm putting this on the list.
Great fucking cast. Wow. Good movie. Igby Goes Down. Don't correct me if I'm wrong.
Will not.
Okay. So our top five, still coming in at number five, The Banger Sisters is back. Barbershop. My Big Fat Greek Wedding, and it's 24th week.
It keeps rising.
Is at number three. It was last week three also.
Okay.
But it is just, it will not budge.
Uh-huh.
Like, it has now made $139 million.
It's made us home there.
It's crazy. Okay, so number two, we've got something new.
Oh.
It is Jackie Chan's The Tuxedo.
Yes. Okay.
It was the Jackie Chan, Jennifer Love Hewitt. This cast is crazy. Jason Isaacs, Debbie Mazar, and Peter Stormare.
Wait a minute.
So if we recall the plot of The Tuxedo, is like... Mm-hmm. So there was a period where Jackie Chan was like, it's time to make movies in America.
Mm-hmm.
And he made a bunch of really ones that people loved and that did well, like your Rush Hours, things, the diminishing returns, like your Shanghai Noon. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, your really diminishing returns, things people do not remember. A movie that made $100 million, actually. Never mind. What the fuck?
Wow. Okay.
Jackie Chan's The Tuxedo, where he is wearing a tuxedo that turns a regular guy into a superstar martial artist, because it's like a gadget tuxedo.
Mm-hmm. The thing is even a bad Jackie Chan movie is pretty entertaining.
Well, that's the thing. Yeah. Sorry. The tuxedo. I've never seen this one. It does say the tuxedo grants its wearers special abilities, including martial arts, speed, the ability to cling to walls and perform acrobatics, but also to sing and dance, which is very interesting to me.
I mean, it's
how does a tuxedo make you sing?
Oh, well, that's fair.
Is it okay? You know what? Sorry, asked and answered. The cummerbund could conceivably manipulate your diaphragm.
And I would think it might be accessorized, and like, especially if it had a bow tie. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's
working his vocal cords. You know what? I'm so stupid. I'm such a moron, Clayton.
I mean,
I don't know why I didn't think about
you. Obviously, never designed a high tech tuxedo.
That's a really, really good point. Yeah, this movie seems great. Colin Mockery is in it.
The thing is that I can't tell if I've seen enough commercials of it when I was younger, or I watched it like half while it was on cable, but it feels like I've seen it. It's the thing.
Yeah. I'm reading. So they filmed this in September, 2001. So I'm sure they also had a similar sort of Turtle Club moment.
Oh,
there's an interesting note here on the Wikipedia page. Jackie Chan was unsure about the project, adding special effects together with stunts, because this movie's a lot of special effects, I recall, but was interested to work with DreamWorks for the chance to meet Steven Spielberg.
Who wouldn't? I mean,
but also, like, if you're Jackie Chan, I feel like you could just call Steven Spielberg. Be like, hey, I'm Jackie Chan, you're Steven Spielberg, by the way.
It is funny when celebrities do something like that, where they're like, I can't believe I'm meeting Idris Elba. And it's like, you're also a celebrity.
Yeah. Chan found the American approach to stunts and safety restrictive and wanted to repeat a jump, but was not allowed. American films are different. It drives me crazy, said Chan. Apparently, Jennifer Love Hewitt also suffered a broken finger.
I mean, if you've ever watched, like the Jackie Chan films
watch
from outside the United
States. The first
States.
Police Story.
Warrior one. Like, they're the ones where he points out that, like, you know how we did that incredible stunt you can't believe we did? It's because we tried it 100 times.
Yeah,
or
like
300 times.
I was really struck by, there was a while ago, the Criterion Collection had, or the Criterion Channel had, like, a bunch of his early Chinese movies. And I watched a ton of them. And the first Police Story is astonishing. It's such a good movie. What's happening is so crazy. But while the credits are rolling, it's just a montage of people getting carted off to the fucking hospital. Like, it's they want you to see that, like, 20 people sacrificed their bodies for the shit. And there's like, there's a very famous one. It's Rumble in the Bronx, where he broke his foot doing a stunt where he's supposed to jump onto a hovercraft. Because there's a big final chase scene where he's chasing a hovercraft in that one through what's clearly Vancouver, despite it being Rumble in the Bronx. But in that one, you see him break his foot. And then, like, I think the next day or even that day, I don't know, he has a cast on his foot and they take a shoe and they cut it up into pieces and they hot glue the pieces of the shoe to the outside of the cast. So it looks like he's wearing a shoe from far away, and he just does it again.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'd like to watch him sing and dance to uncover a mafia plot with Jennifer Love Hewitt. Sure. Great. And of course,
you'll have fun.
Yeah. Down in the Dregs also was a Disney release that did kind of poorly called Moonlight Mile, which I don't remember at all, but Jake Gyllenhaal, Dustin Hoffman, Susan Sarandon, Holly Hunter, and Ellen Pompeo.
Is it a live action, or is it Disney like that?
It is a Disney live action film.
Okay, interesting.
Yeah.
Can't win them all, I guess.
Yeah, it's like, I don't know. Anyways, but number one is Reese Witherspoon's Sweet Home Alabama. This is the classic high-powered executive returns to her roots, meets Patrick Dempsey or whatever, I believe is who she falls in love with there.
I caught up on that one this year, actually, when we did a Witherspoon marathon.
Yeah. Sorry. Patrick Dempsey is the Baxter in it. He's the one that gets cooked. His mom is the mayor of New York City.
It's a solid film. It wasn't my favorite of the marathon, but
it's not bad. It made $180 million. People loved this movie at the time.
They don't. Yeah.
A thing that I remember really vividly was at the time my wife, then just a friend of mine, was living in Rome for a semester of college.
Oh, wow. Nice.
Later. And saw the DVD of this movie somewhere a few years later. And it was in Rome, just in English, the title of the film was Fashion Victim. Because they have no conception of
Alabama.
The song Sweet Home Alabama or what Alabama is.
Yeah.
Like, imagine watching a movie where you're like, yeah, this one's set in the Italian state of Puglia. I guess I know more about Puglia than Italians know about Alabama, though. I don't know. Maybe they know about Alabama now because the world culture has been smashed into a tiny little, it's been cubed like a big car into one little point. Anyways.
Yeah. I think also maybe now that I'm in New York City, I dislike the, like, I'm going to escape the big city and now I'm going to enjoy all you has to offer in the rural America. And it's
I've always hated it.
Don't go, do the other direction.
Yeah. As a rootless cosmopolitan.
Exactly.
My child of the city myself, in some ways, I always found that trope to be stupid because I spent a lot of time. I grew up mostly in the woods and all my family lived in the city and I spent a lot of time in the city. And every time I had to go back to the woods, I was like, hey, wait, this sucks shit and everyone is mean and weird.
It's also why when I finally caught up only recently on My Cousin Vinny, I loved how that is the opposite. That is a city guy being like, it fucking sucks here. How can you live this way?
Extremely.
Yeah. All right.
Like he gets used to it and he wins, but he's basically gaming how fucking stupid everybody is.
And he's trying to get out of there as fast as possible at the end.
Yeah, like them like zipping out of there is so funny. Well, that's the movie-ish, Mr. Ashley.
And it was a fun time, but we'll get to this solidly middling episode, or maybe slightly above average.
Yeah.
Let's go. I don't know what I was doing.
You
want to
say that? Can you say that less narrow?
Let's go.
Thank you.
All right. So, mind you. I did not like how this started off because I was like, oh no, it's a Malcolm focused episode. I'm just going to say this right. I wrote this somewhere later after we were partway through this, but I think he's probably my least favorite member of the normal crew.
Not interesting.
he's kind of anti-interesting. Like, yes. Even Travis doesn't have much going for him because of the writing, but I still just find him more pleasant to be around.
Yeah, like, Travis has, like, Travis represents the interestingness of the concept of the show.
Yeah, yes, yes. And we'll get right up to what Malcolm is baffling about him, which is, okay, I can't stop thinking about the World Cup still exists. England still exists. What's going on
the
here?
The English Navy still exists.
Exactly.
The Queen apparently exists because the submarine he mentions is the HMS. It's HMS. Something.
Okay. I do know. It just, the English existing, but America is like the North America zone. Like, I don't know. But the point is this is brought up because he's at breakfast with his captain, and it's just supposed to be like a nice little breakfast where he wants to talk to him about sports. And he's like, yeah. I don't follow sport. You know, England just won the World Cup, apparently. But I'm mostly focused on what the fuck? Why is England still around?
Why is England still around? Why is soccer still around?
Anyway, it doesn't deserve to be. Malcolm, though, he wants to talk business. He's just uncomfortable, very obviously. And his discomfort made me uncomfortable, which is I was immediately like, I don't want a Malcolm-focused episode. But no. We get escalating action pretty quick. They find a Minshara-class planet, and they're like, cool, let's walk on some volcanoes. Archer's like, he's like, we're going to go down in teams, and we'll have rotations, and we're going to explore one. Let's preferably not, you know, erupting, and then
an explosion. I loved this, because it was like, we're in for some happy, some like Star Trek happy horse shit that I don't really care for, which is like,
yes,
we have to go exploring. Yeah. Like, in the way that, like, okay, like, I understand that's a lot of Star Trek. Mm-hmm. But, like, the conceit that every time they see anything even medium interesting, they gotta go stop. I'm like, well,
he does have, yeah, specifically this tendency to be like, this is the biggest mountain ever. This is the biggest comet ever. And it's like,
sure. This is my boring. I saw someone on social media somewhere pointing this out the other day, and it's totally true, which is that one of the best characters in all of Star Trek, I think, is Seven of Nine, who I love on Voyager, who's like a Borg that they like, yeah. And what every time they're doing this on Voyager, every time they're like, oh, it's a star cluster, well, let's go scan it, she's always like, why? Because she doesn't come from like dork culture, like all these dorks are from.
Yeah,
like this is like fun. The thing about Star Trek is, I mean, not at I think the point in history of Enterprise, but like of like Next Gen and forward, is like Earth culture is, it's Earth is like dork planet.
Mm-hmm. It's a by this point, especially, yeah.
It's a planet of dorks. So.
And they're fascinated by some volcanoes. But no, we're not doing volcanoes.
No.
We're doing explosions.
We're not even doing volcanoes.
Yeah, volcanoes. And it's a mysterious explosion. Malcolm springs into action. You know, pretty quickly, no fatalities, but a bunch of injuries, including Hoshi.
And they really drive home the difference between a casualty and a fatality.
Mm-hmm.
They're like, any casualties are like, yes, including Hoshi, but nobody died. And it's like, okay, yeah, we get it. We know the different things.
Yeah, we get it. But like, I'm kind of like, why didn't they just kill a nameless person? Like, why did they have to make this a, like, everyone's okay? Whatever. Something also attaches to the hole.
I actually think I understand, which is it causes a story problem, which is, well, maybe I don't. I understand maybe why they didn't do it, but I don't understand why. So if somebody dies, then they got to deal with the fallout with the high command of them babysitting them again.
Yeah.
And maybe they just didn't want to do that as a story. But also, maybe that's interesting. Maybe that's another beat in the whole thing with the Vulcans is you let, anyways, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. It's not important because what's actually important is that while they're still like have no idea what happened and they're like in a caution mode, they discover something else attaching to the hole. And after it, like they have a camera on it, it slowly decloaks. It's a, what apparently is a mine.
Yeah.
And Malcolm is like, I'm the only one with training to defuse it. So I got to go out there and do it.
He's like, I've defused dozens of these.
Yeah, apparently.
And it's like, where are you defusing bombs? It's whatever.
Yeah, whatever.
Fucking.
So we get some nice zero G stuff where he's like putting on a suit. He's floating on an airlock. And then I just noted it's followed up by some terrible CGI of Malcolm walking to the mine on the surface of the ship. But, you know.
Yeah, Malcolm and Archer doing a lot of really incredible space walking miming in this episode.
Yes. Like, whenever they're doing it for real.
It's really not bad.
I was kind of dreading, like, expecting it to not be up to snuff. But frankly, they did a good job of the being in space-ness of it.
Yeah, they could have easily been doing what is it? Mr. Heavyfoot
from
You've seen the Kids in the Hall sketch?
Oh god, yes.
Mr. Heavyfoot goes to buy milk and it's Dave Foley like being like chunk, and then the joke at the end, there's all these like short films and it's always like subtitled in French. It's like Monsieur Pierre Lourdes whatever. And the last one is Monsieur Pierre Lourdes goes to the moon, and it's just him walking normally.
Mm-hmm.
I just think about Mr. Heavyfoot a lot. I'm sorry. This is kind of
no, it's because a lot of I'm thinking of specifically the Expanse recently. I mean, Mag boots are a thing in those books and the TV show, mm-hmm. so they kind of make a point of like doing a bit of a stomp. But here, that's not the thing they're trying to convey. It's to convey this kind of hard to work in zero G. So it's like it's good that they're doing it here.
And again, I like that they're like, yeah, we're in fucking space, like space travel has not been demystified to the point where going to the other side of the universe is like getting in your car, like in the other treks, right?
Yeah, we can't land this thing and
like this fix thing it. Is hard to maneuver. We can't go that fast. We are if like a piece of hull plating blows off, like we are in trouble. Like we are in fucking space in the middle of nowhere alone, right? And there's no like help coming all the time. There's no Starfleet. Like it's.
Yeah.
And that is the stuff about this show that I think was the pitch to make it interesting. And when they do it, it works. And like, so that's like kind of an interesting thing here where it's like, yeah, we're in fucking space and there's a mine in the hole. We have no fucking idea what to do. We can't call anybody about this.
And they're even like coming up with backup plans because Archer is considering releasing the hull plating as like a last resort.
He
talks with his engineer, Trip, for his name, forgot for some reason. And then Malcolm is out there starting to defuse it. And then a Romulan warbird from the original series just decloaks.
Yeah.
And I did a tiny bit of hooting and hollering. I will be honest.
Yeah, I was like, ooh. Ooh.
I forgot that's.
Yeah. And then I was like, wait, don't they not encounter the Romulans until like.
Bingo.
It's not in the Romulans are not in the original series, right?
They're like
a secret. Aren't
I thought they were in the original series, but they I thought they were. Yeah.
Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it's like, sorry, they appear in.
Yeah.
It is a very famous episode called Balance of Terror. That's right. That's right. That's right. That's right. That's right. Sorry. Sorry. If you are listening to the show, you probably like Star Trek. And I'm so sorry. I forgot about Balance of Terror. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. Please don't come to my house. Her name is T'Pol. I'm sorry. Please. I'm ducking. I've got my hands over my head. I retire from the show. That's it.
I think we can give you a pass on this one.
Okay. Thank you. I'm back. I'm coming out of retirement to do the back after this episode.
The thing that is frustrating is that we, having both watched it, we kind of know that this doesn't ultimately amount to much.
Yeah.
Because that was like season 5. Like that was literally where this series, that was their like long arc with the like temporal culture, the temporal time
Cold War
being their like, you know, nearer earlier arc they wanted to kind of wrap up with the long tail being like getting into the Romulan war and then the armistice that is signed I think before the original series. I think that's kind of the whole point is that's what like also really pushes the Federation to be a like a common cause. So all we get here is this sprinkling, this hinting. Technically we
there's
already
the
knew
there's the joke in the there's like the throwaway gag in episode 1 where they're in the library and in the future and Archer is like, what's the Romulan Star Empire?
He brings it up here. He's like, I just saw the word. I don't really know what it is though. He wouldn't let me. Like, so okay, it, you know, decloaks, it starts yelling at them, but they can't translate it. They don't have Hoshi at the station. You know, T'Pol can't figure out what to do with those buttons.
Here's the thing about T'Pol is she should know what fucking Romulan sounds like.
I was so wondering that. Yeah.
Like, I don't know. If you're, like, eternally at war with another planet, like, if you live...
Okay, we'll get to this, because there's some more that I'm curious about.
Okay.
I'm so curious about this. So, they get fired on. Eventually, the ship, after yelling, the Brawls just start shooting at them. They turn around. They're slowly navigating around the mines, which I like the little context. They're using the decloaking scanner they built for the Sulaban cloaking, and they were able to futz it and make it work here.
Yeah.
So they're able to slowly navigate, get out of the field, get away from these guys who are yelling at them. But back out on the mine, Malcolm is defusing it. I just want to say, I also think the mine actually looks pretty good as a piece of practical effects. It doesn't, I was also expecting it to kind of look cheap, but something about it looks kind of worn in a way. It feels like they don't always go to the lengths to. So it looks like an old piece of tech. Concerning how much time we spend looking at it, I'm glad it's like pretty good. But what happens here is while they're navigating through these mines, they have to swerve. And I guess that causes Malcolm to like kind of mess up what he's doing or something. Or maybe it just sparks in his face and he falls over. And the mine has these like legs that are supposed to make it deploy and like spike into metal and attach itself to whatever it touches. It happens to spike through his leg, though.
Yeah.
And so he's got essentially like an inch thick metal pole just going through his leg into the ship. And that's not good.
And now he's stuck. And now I'm like, okay. And like at this point, the episode's like shape becomes clear to me, mm-hmm. which is we are saving a little bit of cash.
Yeah, we are.
But it's like, yeah, classic kind of Trek episode where like somebody's stuck somewhere.
Someone's stuck. And you know what? I was also thinking it feels Malcolm also a bit like a retread. A little bit of a retread, even from season one, where you've had...
The episode where they're like stuck in the cave.
Malcolm's stuck in the cave. God. Malcolm's stuck in the ship in the cave. And they're stuck Shuttle Pod 1. Like, they've done the stuck in something episodes. This one is an improvement. It's like they've learned some of the things that make that more tense, more interesting. Like, clearer dangers. Yeah. This, I feel like, is always clear about we have minds floating around. Malcolm is injured. There are Romulans cloaked around us that could shoot at any time. Like it's all tense.
Yeah.
So Archer goes out to help. They want to cut the spike off, but it's got, you know, they can't. It'll blow up the mine.
Yeah.
Malcolm wants to keep trying, like from his position injured, but Archer's like, no, I'm going to do it. You just tell me what to do. Here's some anesthetic to keep you like not in pain.
But not too much.
So now we go back to Hoshi and to Paul. Hoshi is able to just listen and translate because she is so good at it. And she's like, it's the Romulan Star Empire.
Romulan, which is like, how'd you, they probably pronounced it Romulan as Romulan.
I know. It's a weird, and T'Pol's like, it's pronounced Romulan. It's like, okay.
Yeah.
How did you know that? So you do know them. And Archer's like, oh yeah, I remembered when I saw this book. Daniels wouldn't let me touch it though. T'Pol's description here is they're rumored to be an aggressive species, but High Command has made no contact with them.
Yeah.
Is she lying? Is she being lied to? I think that's really interesting. And if this plot line had kept going, I would want to know more about this.
Yeah, if they had any interest in exploring the things that they set up on this show, literally ever.
So when you say, why wouldn't she recognize it? I mean, maybe she totally does, and this is a like...
And it's part of the directive to like...
You do not mention the Romulans.
Yeah, and like, that's, I think, the idea.
Yeah, I would have to think, because it's like, how do you know their name and know that they're rumored to come on? Like,
That's like saying, like, if we were invaded by Martians tomorrow, being like, there are rumors about the Martians existing. And it's like, like, that's the level of not knowing about them that you'd have to...
Exactly. They look strange. Like you. They like,
look,
come on.
They look like you, but evil. They're wearing
evil. Yeah.
They're wearing like big hair shirts
and big eyebrows. Don't they have bigger eyebrows?
They have bigger eyebrows. Thing. They're like, and they have a ridge, I believe.
They do. Right. They do.
The Romulans.
I feel like it's literally season four before we get more of this, which is unfortunate, but
yeah, the original Romulans have quite a ridge at their eyebrows. They got like pointy sort of like. They look very like...
They're just, in a constant frowny face.
Yeah.
So, back in this series, we're out there with Archer trying to disarm it, following directions. He's doing a pretty good job, but while he's doing this, he tries and fails to get Malcolm to, like, keep with their conversation from breakfast. He's literally like, do you have any hobbies? Like, give me something.
Yeah. And he's like, my grandpa lived in the water. His father lived in the water. Everybody loves.
Well, he gets that. He gets to that later. This is just him being like, sorry. I don't like fraternizing with superior officers.
Oh, yeah. He's like, I had a former officer that said that was bad. And Archer was like, so did I. And I fucking hated his guts.
Yeah. Yeah. Archer's like, I disagree. And then he's like, well, I also think Malcolm is like, I also think there's way too many opinions on the bridge. And Archer's like, I also disagree, dude. And then.
Yeah. And Archer makes a good point, which is like sort of like the central premise of a lot of the modern Trek shows, right? Which is we're out in the middle of nowhere. Like, we need to be friends.
Uh-huh.
This ship is a family.
This is why I like this, which is actually these these three things he brings up. One is I like fraternizing. He's like, Archer's reasoning for that is good, and it's kind of the Star Trek reason. We're not really the Navy. We're something more than that. We're explorers, and we're out here alone. We need to be friends. Yeah. The second thing is like, yeah, exactly. Like, I have a team of experts, and I rely on you for your fields of expertise. Of course I want opinions on the bridge. And they're kind of establishing that, which is good. These two things they're establishing as the going forward, how this works. But then his last point is he thinks Archer doesn't show enough caution when it comes to security. And before we can really get into that, what we are hat tipping here is that this is something that Malcolm, it's like the one thing his character does is he establishes like when something bad happens on the deck, we need a like, what's it, set condition one or
whatever. Or,
they have battle stations. I think he just establishes that's a thing we need for how we operate in a,
we need DEFCON or whatever.
Before we though, you know what this is actually about in real time is Malcolm is acting like he's already dead or he's already gonna die, and Archer's like, I won't have any of that.
Right, and he's like, cut me loose, cut the whole planning off, like send me into space and just explode the mine.
But Travis, you know, completes flying over the minefield, but they're still worried about the Romulans and, you know, obviously they can't go to warp with a guy out on side of the ship.
Yeah.
So back to them, like repairing, this is when they bring up the Navy. Like you said, why are there submarines?
Why are there submarines?
What are they doing other than getting into accidents?
Yeah, he tells some story about how he wanted to be in the Navy, but is aquaphobic, which is to say he's afraid of drowning. And he tells some story about his grandpa was on a submarine and drowned on the submarine, saving everybody's lives on the sub. And I'm kind of like, what's the sub doing? Like a Navy sub?
A Navy sub.
Like, I understand, like, if you're like, let's explore the ocean. Like, maybe Sequest DSV is happening at the same time as the show. Like, I don't know. Like, let's explore the ocean. It's scary.
Start communicating with dolphins. That's a thing. Yeah,
like,
you know,
it's dangerous. You could die doing that. Sure. Because it's exploring. But, like, there's one Earth government at this point, right?
Sorry.
I didn't mean this is like the central thing that drives us both insane, I think, which is like, what is Earth at this moment in the canon of Star Trek?
Is it Earth government plus England?
Like, it's so gooey, the whole thing. And also, don't Malcolm's parents live in like fucking Singapore or something?
That too, like
Australia, like are they like
or Indonesia?
Indonesia, yeah, like somewhere like on the Pacific Rim, I think. But anyways, like I.
Like, it's a pan, you know, the world, everyone loves
so it.
I want
like there's
it
no
one
fucking
world
countries then. Don't like do it. Don't it, Malcolm?
What would be the Her Majesty's ship be for the one world government?
How do Federation ships get? It's USS, isn't it?
Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah. It's the USS Enterprise.
The US. Yeah.
What is the USS? What does the USS stand for?
United, yeah, actually, you're right.
United Starfleet ship?
Starfleet? I guess.
What does the USS stand for in Star Trek? That's the Googling
this
noise.
This is breaking news.
It's United Starship.
United Starship, all right.
Fuck off.
Think about
United,
this better.
United Spaceship or United Starship. Referring to the United Federation of Planets.
Go fix that.
Hey, let's build a time machine to fix this.
So, setting aside why the hell are there submarines in a Navy? He looks to his uncle as being a heroic figure because his uncle also had the same fear but got over it, and he couldn't get over it. Instead, served on a spaceship, which is cool. Like, why are you why are you mad about this? You might even die in a cool way. Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
So, but he's also inspired, I guess, by the fact that his uncle was so willing to die for his crew that he's like, come on, dude, like, just let me die for the crew.
Yeah. Let me die.
The Romulans come back, demand they jettison the hole. They can tell they're science scanning. They're like, we know you just got one dude out there. Just jettison and get out of here. Like, we have claimed this planet. Leave. The bomb was almost done. And then, you know, mumbo jumbo, they trigger a sub detonator. Oh no, who could have expected that?
The sub strikes again.
The sub strikes again. You know, it's fucked. They can't get to the sub detonator. It's inside, you know, and Malcolm's like, please let me die heroically. It's what I've always wanted to do.
Yeah.
But Archer's really mad that that's how he's acting. And he's like, I will find a way. And I think this is a pretty good solution in terms of like what we know, which is they figured out when he activated it by hitting the sub detonator that it was going to go off in about, you know, 10 to 20 seconds. They kind of argue. I think it was about 10, it was 20, you know, whatever it was, it didn't go off immediately. So he's like, you know, we could cut the legs off around your leg. We know it's going to give us a little time. We grab, literally, he asks Trip for some doors off of their shuttle pods.
Yeah.
And he's like, we're just going
to
flee.
He says, I forgot to write down the name of the material that they're made out of.
Oh yeah. It's like,
but it's like tophonium. Like it's unexplodanium. It's really funny.
Oh, but like, you know, even no, if he's
it's
trying to...
It's duratanium, I believe.
Duratanium, yeah. It's durable.
It's it's made out of durablonium.
Oh, I shouldn't skip over this, that like in all of this, like Archer trying to figure it out.
Yeah.
Malcolm literally is like, let me die. And he takes out his oxygen supply. Yeah. And Archer, you know, gives him air and he's furious. But so they go with the plan.
It also, though, I will say Starfleet ingenuity.
Yeah.
Which is that you have a helper hose on the side of your pack there.
Right.
Like Archer didn't have to disconnect his own air to do it.
That's true. Yes.
Normally it solves the stupidest problem in all of cinema stuff where it's like you're in space and you got to share the air hose. And it's like,
here you go.
Why isn't there just a second hose?
Take some air. I do like this little line when Archer like kind of tells T'Pol the plan and she's just like, I assume it's pointless for me to question this plan. And he just doesn't even respond. Okay. The Romulans come back. They start like, you know, they're still yelling. They eject the plate. And this is all getting pretty tense because the Romulans are like charging up weapons. They're like, you know, okay, you've ejected it. Get out. But then they cut the spike. They fly away. They turn around with their shuttle doors and it explodes. And then a classic of this series, a really cool thing happens completely off screen. Where Travis catches them in the cargo bay. It would have been really cool, but we cannot show any of that.
We cannot show that.
They jump to warp, and I don't know why, but something about this warp jump effect I thought looked cooler. I don't know if it's just seeing it next to the classic warbirds, but I don't know. Or it's like we're always going with the Enterprise when it warps somewhere, usually on the series.
Yeah,
but
this time
we don't see it.
Just go away.
Yeah. But yeah, and then, you know, Archer and Malcolm kind of debate that whole, like, was it 10 seconds, 20 seconds? I thought, you know, whatever. It's not actually the best little thing to end on, but
yeah.
So, you know. Solidly above average, I think, even just thinking about it again, like there's enough in this one and not enough bad. It was just mostly me being baffled by what is going on Earth.
Yeah, like my problems with it were almost like the episode was, again, like replacement level Modern Trek episode where I was like, yeah, all right, pretty good.
You know,
and like squeezed an interesting episode out of Malcolm. Which
exactly. It's like, I don't care about him more, but after being like really dreading it at the beginning, it turned out okay.
Yeah. So I got no problems with it.
So
it's pretty good.
It was an episode of Star Trek, and this was an episode.
It's true.
Of Temporal Culture War. I got it right.
You did it.
Check out the Patreon because we finally did it. The bravest Star Trek podcast ever did an episode about Star Wars.
You did.
And we had a lot of fun, I think. So
I had a great time. I really, really enjoyed it. To watch that horrible film.
Just a couple bucks and there'll be more. There's a ton already on there actually. So we appreciate everyone subscribing.
Yeah.
Tell a friend.
Tell a friend. Tell an enemy.
Oh, that's an interesting tack.
Curse them with needing to watch the show Star Trek Enterprise.
Wow. Yeah, I never thought of it that way.
Anti-marketing. Anti-marketing.
Well, for Temporal Culture War, I am Clayton Ashley.
And I am Maddie
Love
Chensky.
And as we always say.
And until next time.
Let's go. Let's go. I will promise I'll never do that again.
No, you have to do it every time. I'm sorry. Bye.
Bye.